From the K2O Newsroom, I'm Pablo Peña with a local and statewide news update. The Alaska legislature is planning to reconvene Monday to formally appropriate federal COVID-19 relief following a lawsuit that seeks to block the state government's current plan for the relief. Lawmakers would meet in Juneau, according to a spokesperson for the Senate majority. Legislative staff and the State Department of Health and Social Services are working on rules to discourage coronavirus infections. The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approved Governor Mike Dunleavy's plan for more than $1 billion in federal CARES Act relief on Monday. Juneau resident Eric Forer and his lawyer Joe Geldof filed the lawsuit, which alleges that the process was unconstitutional because the entire legislature must vote to appropriate the spending. Superior Court Judge Philip Pallenberg has been assigned the case. Alaska Seaplanes says it wants to buy Penn Air and save the Southwest Alaska Airlines operating certificate, which it says could disappear in a few weeks. Penn Air is owned by Raven Air Group, which declared bankruptcy earlier this year amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Juneau-based Alaska Seaplanes has put in an effort to buy Penn Air's Part 121 certificate from Raven, which allows scheduled service to destinations like Dillingham and Bristol Bay and Dutch Harbor in the Aleutian Islands. Raven's management has been trying to secure investment and federal aid to keep the company alive, but Alaska Seaplanes co-owner Ken Crayford says that's not realistic, and the best way to maximize Raven's value is to sell off its assets in an orderly way.
Raven is dead, and any chance at resurrecting it has passed, and any attempt to do so is a fool's errand.
The bid from Alaska Seaplanes is in collaboration with a Connecticut investment firm, Wexford Capital, that lost a previous bankruptcy auction for Penn Air in 2018. The operating certificate is Penn Air's primary asset at this point, Crayford says, since the company leases its planes rather than owns them. Penn Air, like the rest of Raven's companies, has been grounded by the pandemic, and Crayford says it needs to return its planes to the air by early June in order to keep its certificates from lapsing. The company has already received one extension from the federal government, and it's not clear if it will be able to receive another. If their certificate lapses, it will be much more expensive to resurrect the airline, he says.
We have a very narrow window of opportunity here to have the Raven bankruptcy end up being a pause rather than a full stop.
Crayford would not say how much Alaska Seaplanes is offering to pay for the certificate, but he says the longer Raven waits before selling off its assets, the less they're going to be worth. He says Alaska Seaplanes wants to continue operating Penn Air, which its leased fleet of Saab aircraft. Raven's chief executive did not respond to emails Friday. The company is in line to receive $30 million in grants and $5 million in loans from the U.S. Treasury Department if it finds a buyer that will continue operating as a, quote, going concern, the company said in a bankruptcy filing Thursday. Municipalities and states are facing a wildly uncertain and unpredictable future. Even with federal aid, vacant positions may go unfilled. Services may be cut, and some employees could be furloughed or laid off as budgets shrink dramatically. In Juneau, a fire department employee just retired. That will likely leave this former supervisor to do all the work alone for the foreseeable future. KTOO's Matt Miller reports.
Sven Pearson remembers getting hooked in his 20s. Within hours of seeing a Juneau newspaper ad asking for volunteer firefighters, he and a buddy were donning turnout gear and air packs. Really? They entered a burning trailer during a training exercise, except they had absolutely no training.
Obviously, we do not do that anymore. Every once in a while, when I share that story with some of the younger folks who joined the department, their eyes bug out and they just can't believe it.
When Pearson served as a volunteer firefighter, he noticed other firefighters poking through the rubble after the fire was put out.
It just fascinated me, the whole idea that they were putting together this puzzle of how the fire started and what happened.
So he took extra training and later got the deputy fire marshal's job under Fire Marshal Dan Jaeger. Pearson retired at the beginning of May, so Jaeger will not have a second set of eyes to help him out at a fire scene. But the job isn't always about investigating fires. Sometimes it's talking to school children about fire safety or helping the community respond to big emergencies like the current pandemic. Fire marshals spend a lot of their time reviewing construction plans and building permits for commercial and multifamily residential buildings. Are there enough emergency exits, and are the sprinklers set up right? Fire hydrant nearby, enough room for the fire trucks and other emergency vehicles to pull in out front, that sort of thing. They also do walkthrough inspections to make sure that buildings stay up to fire code. With Pearson gone, Jaeger, by himself, will have to review as many as 150 building plans and do 400 inspections each year. With the pandemic, those are done differently.
We've changed the way we do some of our inspections, like for childcare licensing. We've used FaceTime with the home providers to eliminate us having to go into their home and having any kind of potential exposure or contact concern.
With the city facing a huge shortfall and some uncertainty about the use of Federal CARES Act relief funds, City Manager Rory Watt doesn't expect the now vacant deputy fire marshal position will be funded next year. He says assembly members are drafting a budget based on their priority for each city service.
The ones that are on the lower level of priority tend to be discretionary recreation facilities, library, parks, that kind of thing. So I do not expect cuts to the traditional police and fire services, but I think there's going to be a lot of pressure in all parts of the city.
Watt expects commercial construction in Juneau to be down again this year, so Jaeger may not have a huge workload for building plans and permit reviews after all. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
The coronavirus has canceled a lot so far, and that includes many weddings. But some Alaska couples say they are still trying to make it work. They're rushing to the courthouse for last-minute paperwork, trying on wedding dresses by Zoom, and moving their first dance from ballrooms to living rooms. Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon has stories from three couples who say they won't let the coronavirus stop them from saying their vows.
Welcome, family, friends, and loved ones. We are not gathered today.
This is a wedding in Alaska during the coronavirus. That was a friend of Kendra Kennedy and George Faber, who was supposed to be in Alaska in March, but she sent her message by video instead, and so did nearly every other guest.
Congrats on your wedding. We wish we could be there to celebrate in person, but we'll toast you and wish you well from Wisconsin.
Kendra and George got married in Girdwood, about 45 minutes south of Anchorage, the city where Kendra grew up. They had planned the wedding for almost a year, and then in weeks, everything changed as the coronavirus spread across the globe.
2 weeks before our wedding, we had 110 confirmed guests. And over the course of 8 days, it went down to 12.
But even with the rush to change plans, George says they always knew they would get married. Somehow, some way, on March 21st. Marriage is more than just one day, George says, or one celebration.
No matter how bad things got, no matter how stressful things, became, no matter how many people canceled, that the one thing we knew is we're going to get married on this date, and, that's what the most important thing.
So Kendra's sister ended up hurrying to the courthouse to get paperwork to marry them. They live-streamed their wedding from a church in Girdwood with just a few people in the pews and had their first dance in a living room. The next day, Anchorage started hunkering down. There's also nothing quite like hunkering down for several weeks to solidify a relationship, says Gus O'Malley. Gus and Grace Graham live in Anchorage and plan to get married this month.
The fact that we've been stuck in the house together for the last 6 weeks and still really like each other, so that's probably a good sign that we still actually want to spend our lives together.
Gus and Grace say they always imagined they would elope one day, though when they told Grace's mom that, she did not love the idea. So in December of 2018, they started piecing together a Girdwood wedding for May 30th of this year. But again, then came the coronavirus, and it has kind of set them back to their original plan. Now, they'll have a tiny ceremony on a porch or at a park.
Initially, we wanted something really small and simple, and it's kind of been enforced, so that is maybe good.
In a lot of ways, getting married during a pandemic is about adapting and changing expectations. And it turns out it also, like many parts of life right now, can rely on Zoom.
I love it. This is my new favorite. I think this is very pretty.
That's the sound of picking out a wedding dress over Zoom. Maggie Ryan and Chuck Herman are getting married later this summer. Maggie is trying on a series of dresses in their Anchorage home, and Chuck is helping drape the gowns so friends can better see them on their laptop screens.
I think I am one of the first grooms in history to be a wedding dress shop assistant as well, which involves me crawling around on the floor with my eyes closed.
Maggie and Chuck have postponed their big Talkeetna wedding celebration until next year. For now, they'll return in June to where they got engaged, Root Glacier outside of McCarthy, and in front of just a few friends, they'll say their vows. In Anchorage, I'm Tegan Hanlon.